Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Hi, everybody, and there we go. And let me just, I know you always pick on me for twiddling
it's
with knobs.
It's just jokes. But relax, okay? It's just jokes. And you guys might not know this, but Scott and I haven't recorded for a couple of weeks due to real life. And Jesus Christ, what did we get? 18 fucking inches of snow in the last couple of weeks?
Some insane amount that was utterly silly. And it's been absolutely no fun at all.
You guys aren't hearing a break in these, but Scott and I are recording these a ways apart from one another. So let's get the Adam and Eve promo off the top. AdamandEve.com. Go there. Use the promo code STATIC to get 50% off of a single item, 3 free DVDs, free U.S. shipping, and a free mystery gift at AdamandEve.com, all for using the promo code STATIC. Don't I almost pretend I'm professional when I do that sometimes?
Almost. You get there.
Eh, picky. So we're going to finish up, okay, the console wars. We'll have another one following this that doesn't necessarily fall into that, but will be related. Agreed?
Okay. Yeah, kind of, sort of, in a little bit.
Well, so where we left off was basically what you called the bridge systems. Remember? Where we started to get the disc-based systems like the Sega CD and whatnot.
Right. We got the add-ons and we got stuff like that. And,
right.
And now so, we're moving into definitely,
mid-90s.
Yeah, the mid-90s, the stuff that people will definitely remember.
And when we get to there, we get to some of the greater mistakes from some of the big boys. What was the first console from this era that you had?
Let's see here. I did not have an Xbox One.
I never had one of those either. Well, no, I think you mean Xbox Original.
The original Xbox. Yeah. God damn, that's
it's
Microsoft,
such a stupid
you
name.
Fuckers. God, that is so annoying. I did have a PlayStation 2.
Okay.
That one I had.
You didn't
and
have a
PS1, I not me personally, no. But I was this was college, so I think I was playing on a roommate's at the time.
Okay. See, I never did new, but I found one at Goodwill for $5. So I have a PlayStation 1 now, but I didn't until after I already had a PS2. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So then, no. Now, yes.
Yeah. But the first console that of the modern era that I've had was a PlayStation 2, and it was a big deal because I was working at Steimel Communications at the time, doing radio tower work. And I was out on the road, and we bought the PS2, and it was a big deal because we hacked the hotel TV so we could hook it up.
Yeah, for those that don't remember the hotel TVs, nowadays they're a little more friendly to hooking a console and stuff up.
It depends on where you go. Depends on where you go.
In the 90s, no. Those things are made that you will watch what they want because a lot of, and this does tie in, a lot of hotels will have video games that you pay, $10 to play for an hour or something like
they
that.
They did. That's not around too much anymore, but they
well,
did
I think
at
with
the
mobile
time.
Gaming, that's become pointless.
Right.
The funny thing was they were always way out of date at the hotels. I mean, you'd be in the PS2 era, and they would still be wanting you to pay $5.95 an hour to play Mario Kart on an N64.
Right.
And you just go, wow, you really didn't just advance, did you, boys?
Right. Well, and what we ended up having to do, because the cable was even hardwired, the cable came out of the wall, went into the little SpectraVision box or whatever it was.
Spare no expense, huh?
And then went into the TV, and it was all hardwired. So the guy that I was working with at the time, we just went out to the truck, grabbed our microwave radio tools, brought
pull,
them up.
Pull, splice.
No, we just chopped cables. We didn't even splice in. We ended up chopping cables, pulling them, desoldering them from the motherboard, and then we had some spare RCA connectors. We found where they would have been soldered in, soldered them into the motherboard.
Did you leave it like that when you left?
So oh, the next fuck yeah.
The next person would have access to that?
Well, you got to understand, because of the nature of the work, we had this room for 3 months. Yeah, I was in the same room for 3 months, and we just left it.
It'd be curious if you'd go back now and see. Holy shit! Because you know hotels don't upgrade. They'll probably still got the same TV.
Well, I'm just curious who.
That was weird.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, that just echoed for no, and then it went away.
There we go. Yes, that was strange.
I thought it was just me that heard that. I'm glad it was not just me.
No, but I would love to go back and one, see if they fixed it, and two, I wonder who they blamed, because you know they normally blame the last person that was there, and
right.
Who knows, the next person that got the obviously couldn't even watch TV, so I'm sure they went, hey, it's broken, and the hotel went in and went,
those fuckers.
Yeah. And so I'm sure the business got charged for a TV, but yeah, we just ripped it out and desoldered and resoldered and fixed it. But
this era brought us what they like to call the next generation graphics. This is right. Where you had a weird mixture of polygon with sprites with just straight out animation.
Well, any 3D that was done, any true 3D animation, it was very low polygon count at the time.
That's why you had those large shapes and kind of blandish colors and
the best, well, the colors don't really matter, but the best example I can think of is like Star Fox 64, where you get that weird triangular mm-hmm. ship that's made up of these big chunky triangles. Well, that's because it was a low polygon count, so they used what polygons they could make
and
to give you a 3D ship.
That always bothered me, the hot polygons. That's why one of the reasons I avoided this era at first, because you know the Xbox original and the PlayStation 1 and the N64 and that, because they have those large polygons, to me they were hideous looking. Like I used to have people go, well, Virtua Fighter is such a great game, it's amazing over Mortal Kombat, and I'm like, but it looks like shit. They look like they're a pre-render 3D. They look like garbage. Why do you want to play when there's no detail to anything?
They look nothing like pre-rendered 3D.
They're giant polygons.
Yeah, but that's the point. Pre-rendered 3D is pre-rendered FMV.
Well, I can't stand those.
But so, anyway, yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but they were at least true 3D, whereas things like Mortal Kombat and the stuff with the sprites that were detailed that we were used to seeing, or even, there's a horrible game, but Pit Fighter, remember they used digitized photos, yes, and stuff, basically digitized stills to create the illusion of movement using sprites and stuff like that. But
that's actually kind of what Mortal Kombat did. The original, the arcade,
yes,
cabinet was digitized.
Okay.
It was actually digitized motion capture.
But anyway,
by then the technology had advanced to the point where it didn't look as bad as Pit Fighter did.
Right, right. But, you know, at least with Virtua Fighter and some of the given low polygon count games, but they were true 3D.
And see, to me, the sacrifice wasn't worth it, but the first console of this era that really came out was the Sega Saturn, which would be going up against what we now know as the powerhouse that is Sony's PlayStation.
Right.
Obviously, Sony won this. Put yourself back in yourself in 1995. Where would you have fallen had you been there to make the choice? PlayStation or Sega Saturn?
Oh, looking at the games, PlayStation.
Even right off the bat?
Yeah, even right off the bat. Just looking at the games they offered, and you know, by that time they had not only their opening lineup, so to speak, but they had views of stuff coming. And to be honest, I mean, PlayStation just dominated this one.
Partially because Sega fucked up hard.
Right.
You know what happened on Sega's launch day, right?
No, what happened on Sega's launch day?
The Sega Saturn, because they were supposed to come out a week before the PlayStation. And, you know, this is right at Christmas. Everyone wants that Christmas business whenever you're launching a new console, right?
Right.
So what Sega did at the last minute was decided, you know what? We're going to launch 2 weeks early. And so all of a sudden it's on the shelves before the advertised date. They forgot to tell the people making the games.
Oops.
So they released the system with
didn't have any
five
games
at launch. only one of them was one that was anyone. I mean, there was a racing game, a sports game, and you know, there was like, okay, nobody wants your launch games because you launched a week before you said you were going to, you fucking morons.
Right.
And that cost them hard. So then when the PlayStation came out a couple of weeks later, they went, hey, look, all our shit that we promised you is here. And sales shot up. And then the Sega Saturn had burnout problems. They froze. Not like the Xbox 360 with the Red Ring of Death. Sega Saturn had issues with the disk drive. So again, I think they probably rushed it to market to try and beat Sony and the quality. What's that?
Yeah, it looked that way. By the way, before we get any further, I did have a listener contact me with a note that he wanted us to pass on to someone for this February to his girlfriend and such. And I'm afraid that I get about 50 to 75 personal notes. At least twice a day, I get that many. And then I also get about 250 notifications per day, and it's buried. And I feel awful because I said I was going to read it, but it's gone.
Can't find it.
I can't find it. Please contact me again, and I'm terribly, terribly sorry.
We fucked up.
Yes. No, no, no. I will own this one. It's all me. It's not
well,
we fucked up.
Our show, so our show fucked up.
I fucked up, yes. All right. But anyway, when it comes to, and you know, Sega Saturn also, that I don't remember the advertising blitz that Sony gave. And the Sega Saturn, everyone I talked to, they were either A, they were broken, because they broke pretty darn quickly, especially those first. And I realized that, like I said earlier, you're going to have problems on a new console launch day. But these guys, even more so than the Xbox Red Ring of Death, these were just broken consoles.
Yeah. And you also had, but you had, just like back in the other console eras, you had a third competitor squeak in.
Yes.
In a strange way, because now we've moved, as you pointed out last week, from the crossover games or the bridge games, we're now disc-based. Nintendo said, you know what? We're going to try this cartridge thing again. And yeah, the N64 came out.
And it was the first of what I believe to be a long line of bad decisions by Iwata.
Well, everyone seems to love the N64, especially if you look back at it.
No, no, no.
Not me.
That's because they're loving it with nostalgia goggles on. And there are a couple of games that were great on the N64. You know, the Super Mario 64 was pretty darn good, and it was a decent little 3D platforming game. Mario Kart 64 was excellent. It's one of the best racing games out there. Then you get games like Blast Corps and
the Castlevania games that were
the Castlevania games that
terrible.
Were put out. And yeah, look, there's the N64 was a decent little system. Nowhere near Sega Saturn or PlayStation.
No.
And it just didn't work.
But then also, doesn't it seem a little strange that they would try the cartridge thing after going, no, we're not going to go with the next generation of gaming, when, because from what I understand, they were developing a disc system for it and then just decided that this isn't working. We need something to compete. We know cartridges work. It almost seemed like a last-ditch move, and that's what it felt like at the time as well.
That's what it felt like at the time, but I don't think it was. I don't think it was at all. I think this was designed to be a cart system. I know that they flirted with the idea of going with discs, but they stayed behind. And I don't think that was a last-minute decision. I think that was a design choice early on in the process. And one of the reasons given by Nintendo was load screens. And that's one thing I'll give them.
Yeah.
N64 had barely any, and if there were load screens, they were very short.
I got a question, though.
But they were good.
Since N64 was 64-bit, do you think this is essentially what Atari was trying to do with the Jaguar a couple of years earlier and lying about?
Yes.
That this is what just the tech wasn't there yet.
Yes.
Back when Atari tried it.
Yeah, it's precisely what it is. They were trying to, and they were playing with 64-bit computing and trying to go with 3Ds, and they used the early 3D cheating system of using balls. And Sega Saturn did this too. Didn't they have a game called Balls or Fighting Balls or something like that?
I know what one you're thinking of. I can't think of the exact title, but yeah, you're in the right area.
But all the fighters were balls, and it was an optical trick of changing shading and size of the ball in order to for you to believe that it was 3D when it really wasn't. So, but yeah, they tried.
Well, and then I think the N64 made a couple of really bad marketing decisions.
Okay.
One, 64 on everything. Mario 64, Zelda 64. Everything was the game title, 64.
Right. Or they did this. Well, they did the same thing with Super Nintendo and Super Mario Brothers and Super Super Mario Brothers. And now they have Super Super Mario Brothers 64 squared.
Play the old N64 commercial. Do we have were we able to find an N64
yeah,
one?
Yeah, we were. This is one. Here we go.
Jingle bells, Santa smells, Christmas really stunk. I got nothing that I like, my gifts were all just junk. Boxes full of clothes, CDs no one knows. When I wanted something for my Nintendo 64, Zelda's great, Turok 2, South Park would be fine. How about Rogue Squadron? That game should be mine.
Make up for a lame Christmas. Get the hits you missed on N64.
Mom and Dad, I'm so sad.
You ungrateful little shits. For
I was
going to
say,
thing.
Yeah. Now, those are some emo little fucks. First of all, the one I like, CDs no one knows. Oh, yeah, because we can only listen to the bands that are really popular, right, man? Not good music that no one knows, right?
Well, let's be honest. Dude, no one knows what CDs are anymore.
This is 98. Come on.
But, you know, and that's the thing is, they named just about their entire good game catalog in that 30 seconds.
That was one of their problems. Nintendo also, that fucking controller. That controller, seriously, I know many people that controller gave hand cramps too, trying to hit all, because the buttons were in such awkward positions.
Well, it was the type of controller, they tried to come up with a controller that you could use right or left-handed. And then they put hand-specific controls on it.
Yeah, you have to use the right bumper to do this or the left bumper to do that.
And I remember playing Rogue Squadron, and it was fun, and you had that little central joystick. And then, for the most part, your left hand, if you're right-handed, your left hand went on the center grabby bit, and you had a trigger, and then you had that thumbstick. And then your right hand sat over what were the C buttons, the little yellow ones. And that was your control for most, except a lot of games needed more buttons than what was offered there. So you had controls on the stick, and then you had to let go of the stick and move up and grab the other grabby bit for your left hand and use the buttons up there. And it was just difficult.
Not just that. There's also a weight issue. You remember how, like, the Atari Jaguar, that thing weighed a ton.
Yeah, so did the N64 controller.
Right, and then they added more weight. Where did the memory card go if you wanted to save your game? You jammed it into the controller. Yeah. And the memory card was not light to begin with, because it's a cartridge memory card, not like the tiny little PlayStation ones. So you're like, you're adding, this is a heavy controller that already is awkward in your hands,
plus
and then is weighting you down.
Plus, this is the beginning of the Rumble Pack.
Oh, yes. And then your controller starts vibrating.
Yes, and the Rumble Pack itself was quite heavy.
Yeah. So it was like, I don't know. To me, this just seemed really poorly thought of. Again, leading to my decision that they wanted to compete and just said, get this on the market. Even if it doesn't work right, it
but
seems.
No,
just...
I. That's the thing. It worked perfectly, and it wasn't a bad controller, unless you used it for a long time. If you were going to sit down and play for 10 minutes and that was it, it wasn't a bad controller at all. But I'm coming to the defense of the N64 here. It wasn't a bad system. It really wasn't. It was a little outdated by the time it hit, But, you know, they mentioned Rogue Squadron. That was a fun as hell game to play. They mentioned...
Wasn't that a PC port? Or I might be wrong on that. I seem to remember that being PC first, Rogue Squadron.
No, that was I know what one you're thinking of. You're thinking of the one that was before that.
X-Wing Squadron?
Yeah, I don't remember, but...
TIE Fighter. The TIE Fighter one is the PC one.
Right.
The one where you play as the Empire.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, you've got X-Wing, you've got TIE Fighter, you've got X-Wing versus TIE Fighter. You've got a whole series there. It was a great series by LucasArts. May they rest in peace.
Yes, they have now been taken behind the garage.
Nonetheless, the N64 really wasn't a bad system. It was just outdated. And that controller, over time, was horribly uncomfortable after a while.
I just think that they thought they could compete. And the real battle seemed to be between Sega and Sony. And Nintendo was just kind of going, guys, I'm here too.
And see, I think looking back, maybe that's the way it seemed at the time. But to tell you the truth, as I remember it, it was the Sega that was left in the dust.
Oh, at the end, yeah. Because the Sega Saturn fucked up, basically. Because one of the things that happened with the Sega Saturn, you ever heard of the never-released Sega Nomad?
No.
Neptune, sorry.
I was going to say, I thought Nomad was the
handheld.
Nomad
was the one where you could actually play full Sega games on a handheld.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, it was actually larger, and it sucked batteries like you wouldn't believe, but you actually took your Sega cartridges, your Sega Genesis's, and put them right into the handheld.
Okay.
But no, this was called the Neptune. Sorry, the N's were throwing me off.
It's okay.
And it was supposed to be basically... like what a Sega CD and a 32X combined were, and that was supposed to come out, and then the Sega CD and the 32X were tanking, so they never put that out.
Never bothered with it.
Right. And then the Sega Saturn came out, and one of the reasons it was broken is it was kind of rushed, because they're like, we haven't put out an actual new system such as the 32X, which bombed. So we need some new console. The Neptune is DOA. It's not even coming out. Get the Sega Saturn out. Whereas Sony went, no, we're not going to release this until we're ready to release this.
Right.
And I don't recall hearing about a lot of load problems or anything like that on the PlayStation 1. It seemed to be a pretty reliable system.
You also have to remember that this is the end of what I consider to be Sony's true glory years. And I'm not talking about gaming here, folks. I'm talking about Sony Electronics. This is the end of their glory years. Do you remember in the 80s when Sony was... It was up there with Harman Kardon and Blaupunkt, and it was high-end electronics.
I do remember that era. I remember, like, oh my God, you got a Sony TV? Yeah,
you got a Sony, and it was... I mean, it was right up there with Nakamichi and some of the stuff that still remains high-end now. Sony over the years, and this is where it first started, was right around the time they made the PlayStation 1. They really started moving down in quality and electronics. Now,
do you think they overextended themselves?
I'm not. I don't know. That's a whole. I'll have to do some research on Sony in general. But they used to be high end stuff, and that's what they wanted to capture with the PlayStation. And I think they did it the right way, because the PlayStation was delayed, what, 3-4 times?
Oh, yeah.
Before?
Well, and initially it was made for Nintendo, as we discussed last time, that it was supposed to be an add-on.
But I mean, after Sony announced the PlayStation was coming, I think it was delayed like 3 times.
Well, yeah, because they said, we're not putting this out until we're ready to put it out.
Right. And that was, you know, they had the entire idea of Sony Electronics laying on this thing. And like I said, at the time, they were still pretty high-end electronics.
And then, I don't know this about the Sega Saturn or not, but I know the PlayStation 1 could also play CDs, and I know some models, I think probably later ones rather than earlier ones, could play VCDs. Remember that idiotic trend for a while of VCDs?
Yeah, and that was later on during the thin years and when they started re-releasing the PS. Well, not re-release. After the re-release, they took out that entire ability.
Because who the fuck was using it, really? Right. I mean, VCD was a DOA format that even found its market.
But they could play CDs, and they were a decent CD player.
I don't know. I don't like listening to CDs through my TV, but that's just
I mean, you know, to a college kid who had it hooked up to his stereo.
Yeah, I can see
the TV. It worked, and you had this visualizer, and you could drop acid and watch your
just trip out to the TV, man.
Basically, that's the way it worked.
And then, especially if you're playing like acid rock anyway, or like Pink Floyd or something.
Oh God, yeah.
Double fuck with your mind.
Oh yeah.
But then this went on for a little while, and then you had another little newcomer, because apparently Sega just cannot get it through their heads. Put out a good console that will last for years instead of put out a new console every couple of years. Sega did not seem to learn this. It seemed like the Sega Genesis was a fluke back in the 90s. You know what I mean?
Well, it was, yeah. And it was
a fluke and good of good. I mean, I don't mean that bad. But
yes.
Because then the Dreamcast came out. And Scott, as you know, the Dreamcast, it didn't really work the way it was supposed to. Again, what the fuck, that controller with you, it's got those little loops where you got to stick your fingers around to use the trigger buttons.
Well, the Dreamcast, the controller itself wasn't bad, and they tried something new, because again, this is during the time when the Tamagotchi was big and the little virtual pets were huge and stuff like that. They, you know, they put the little LCD on their memory card, more or less, and tried to use it in the same way that Nintendo is using the Wii U's controller. It's an extension of the game with more information and stuff like that. At least that was the idea behind it. And then you could take it with you and do the little mini gaming while you were out and about with the, and it had a 3-letter acronym, and I'm there again shouting it at their media players. But the controller really wasn't the problem. If we look at N64, and if we look at Dreamcast, and if we look at Saturn, I will tell you exactly what the common thread is on why these systems failed. Every single one of them.
Games.
Third-party developers. Even more specifically than games, third-party developers. The games that people wanted to play weren't on these systems. And they weren't on these systems because N64 was ridiculously difficult to code for. And on top of N64 being ridiculously difficult to code for, you had the Saturn that had no third-party support. You had the Dreamcast that had very little third-party support. And anytime you say Dreamcast, the only game that people think of is Crazy Taxi.
And Resident Evil Code Veronica.
And Crazy Taxi is the only one that anybody ever thinks of.
And the Dreamcast also had one other major problem that even the Sega Saturn did not have. You brought it up earlier. I think of this era, the Dreamcast had the most ridiculous load times. I never had a Dreamcast, but a friend of mine did, and I just remember sometimes you could actually get up, go to the bathroom, come back, and it was still loading the next level. And it was like, oh my God. I don't know if it was just the laser wasn't powerful enough or they overextended what they thought the system could do, but the load times on the Dreamcast were fucking ridiculous.
The load times were big. Now, the reason the Dreamcast kind of found a weird little niche is because it's also the most hackable. and you know, I wish I had a Dreamcast now for the simple reasons that I could burn a CD here on my computer and I would have every Dreamcast game that ever came out. And I could play with it up there. Plus, the Dreamcast flirted with online. They tried the online thing.
Yeah, we can't ignore that. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not going to ignore that with SegaNet. And there were some brilliant ideas behind Dreamcast. It's just that, like I said, third-party developers didn't jump on board.
Well, before we move on to the next part of the next generation, you brought up online. That was something else. All of these, I can't remember if Nintendo did it. I know Sega did it, and I'm pretty sure I remember Sony doing it, where they had online things. Where do you remember where you would get access to so many games through your cable system in this era? Do you remember that?
I don't remember through the cable system, no.
Yeah, it came through your cable system. You described it was like called Game Channel or something like that.
Okay.
And then you'd hook your controller up to your TV or you know, through your Sega Saturn or whatever, as long as you're hooked up. And then you'd pay your monthly subscription to this channel. And then you'd have access to all the games that they're offering that month. And then the next month, all those would go away and they'd have like 12 new games and whatnot. That was a thing for a while.
Yeah, I remember that with like Sega Net. But that was dial-up.
I remember my cable channel, but this is before I had Primestar, which, you know, I eventually went to DirecTV. They had that. I remember they offered it and we couldn't afford it.
Okay. I believe you. I don't remember that at all.
I just can't remember exactly what it
because
was.
Because I can tell you that the Dreamcast did dial up.
Yep. I do remember that.
N64 did not go. Nintendo didn't delve into online stuff until the Wii.
Yeah.
Sony, I believe it was the PS2, was the first one that had it integrated. I think there was an add-on you could get for the original PlayStation, if I remember right. I know it's been a while.
And
I apologize.
The PS2, we'll get more into it in a minute. The PS2 was the first one that I remember. Well, I guess you could say first because it did come out before the Xbox. That actually said, if you play the game online, it'll actually play better than if you're playing it solo. Resident Evil Outbreak. All the AI, because you know, in a normal Resident Evil game, you're a cop or something like that,
right.
Escaping the city. In this, you're like a taxi driver or something. You're some civilian, and then you have other NPCs around you. But if you played online, all those NPCs were other humans, and you'd have to work together to try and escape Raccoon City during the zombie outbreak. So it actually is a pretty boring and hard to play game offline because the AI is so terrible. You were meant to play this PS2 game with other people online. It's the first one of those that I remember would be Outbreak.
I don't remember that at all.
I mean, it didn't go over very well.
I didn't think so, but I don't remember that at all. I was going to say it reminds me now of Left 4 Dead.
The best part of Outbreak, though, is something that I've never seen another Resident Evil game do. If you get bit, you have a slow infection rate.
Okay.
Where if you don't escape the city or find a cure before you get infected, if you're playing with other people and you turn into a zombie, you can attack them as a zombie and play against them. And I'm like, that's cool.
That's a nice
touch. That's actually pretty cool if you don't stop your own infection.
But at this point, once we've got the Dreamcast out, Sega is they're saying to everybody, including their investors who are bending over and thanking them at this point, they're saying, look, we're going to get out of the hardware game. We're done. We're going to concentrate on games. And that was a brilliant decision.
Yeah, I was kind of sad to see an end of an era, but business-wise, it made sense.
It was a brilliant decision. Now, is the modern Sonic games any reflection on that? No.
Was this the point they were acquired by Nintendo, or did that come later?
That came later.
Okay.
That came much later. They were still independent when they decided they're stepping down from the hardware, and there was somebody that stepped right up to take their place.
Well, because I remember, before you get into that, I remember from this era, there was the point of, you know, I remember reading in like Game Pro and EGM and stuff like that, where it was, this market cannot sustain three companies anymore, three battles, three consoles.
Right.
Obviously, we found out that's not true. But at the time, they were saying, with Sega bowing out, this leaves basically Nintendo and Sony fighting for dominance. And everyone's like, okay, now the market's going to settle on itself.
Exactly. Now, let's this is an interesting era. So let's, this was one of Sega's early... Sega Saturn's early launches against Nintendo, because remember, it was those two that were the giant players at the time. So you had ad systems like this.
There are lots of good reasons to go with Sega Saturn instead of Nintendo. We call them games. Sega Saturn has tons of them. Nintendo has just a few. It does beg the question, do you want to play or twiddle your thumbs? Face it, Nintendo, you aren't worth waiting for.
Yes, the famous Sega scream.
The thing I like about that is, to me, them calling them Pretendo is a nice throwback to the old Sega does what Nintendo don't from the previous gen. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I thought that was a really nice throwback. But as we saw, Nintendo walked away laughing out of this.
Yeah, and they walked away laughing because of ads like this one.
Wrong one.
Whoops, wrong one. We already played that one, didn't we?
Yeah, wrong one, Scott, wrong one.
Oops. But Sega, let's change that one. Sega did launch out again when the Dreamcast came out, and they launched out like this.
This is the day you have trained for, the day you have studied for. Utilize your superior skills, your superior intelligence.
Sit down, rodent!
Oh,
oh, you were one.
Don't make me hurt you.
Learn to defeat your ruthless enemy, Steve of Hackensack.
Brian, you're gonna get root.
Shut up, quadruped.
Sega Dreamcast. It's thinking.
That it's thinking was not a bad catchphrase either. It just, I don't think, lived up to the hype of itself.
No, it didn't live up to the hype of itself. Now, we did see one thing that I think Sega got right. And that was, they did talk about the games. They, since they didn't have the one mascot like Mario, they kind of gathered them all together.
Yeah,
because
Sonic had kind of fallen apart as the Sega mascot.
Exactly. But at the same time, we saw Tails in that commercial.
Oh, and Sonic ran by real quick, too.
Right. And we saw some others. So they kind of went, look, here's the games. And at least here in the U.S., the Dreamcast was going after the cyberpunk crowd.
Yeah, sort of, this is online, you know, log into the Matrix kind
of
shit.
Well, this is online. This is a more advanced system. This is for you guys that know what you're doing. Leave the boys to their toys and their little cartridge systems. You know, again, still lashing out at Nintendo, not realizing that Sony and Microsoft were
waiting in the wings to pounce.
And actually, Sony at this point had pounced. It's just that, you got to remember, at this time, it was really hard for people to take Sony and Microsoft seriously, because Microsoft, they make Windows, and that's...
They're computers.
They're a computer company. They're not going to get into gaming. And Sony, they make CD players and TVs and stuff like that. They can't really... I mean, look at what happened to Magnavox.
I was going to say, Philips, yeah.
And Philips, and we've seen this before, so... It was hard for people to take them seriously.
And then we come to what I think is the best console of this era, and that's the PS2. I think the PS2, the sheer fact that it could play DVDs was a huge selling point over the following year rival, the Xbox, which could not play DVDs.
I mean, the PS1 was a decent system. It got some decent games, and Sony was smart. They went, we make a lot of these games in house, but we don't know exactly what we're doing. So they reached out to people like EA and 2K Games and some of the other system, you know, some of the greats that were out there. Naughty Dog found its home on the PlayStation, and a lot of these game systems that came up because Sony was willing to work with them. And so, but yeah, when the PS2 hit, the PlayStation was the clear winner.
Yeah, well, first of all, it was the only survivor, really.
Right. I mean, the Xbox came out when the original Xbox came out. Or wait a minute,
Xbox didn't come out till after the PS2.
Right. But let's look at the contenders at the time with PlayStation 1. Saturn has fallen by the wayside. Dreamcast, fallen by the wayside. Sega steps out of the hardware game. Nintendo really hasn't come out with anything since the N64. That's an outdated system, and it's seen as a toy. It's not a gaming system. Yeah, it's a kid's thing. And so what you're left with is PlayStation, and eventually PlayStation 2 was the last thing for us here serious gamers. Who's going to compete?
The PS2 was a good system, too.
And the PS2 came up, and the PS2 did the same thing as the PS3 in a very smart thing. And it was a DVD player. and it priced itself right alongside other DVD players.
So it was kind of like you're getting a game system on top of a DVD player.
Exactly. If you want to play DVDs, hey, here's your system to do it. And you get all these cool games with it, too.
Right. And then you had interesting commercials. Scott and I are not sure where this one's from, but we both agree it's not American. But this was an interesting way. It's for Grand Theft Auto Vice City, but to sell a PS2 game.
Hi, Anthony Sullivan here with a great new invention that'll change your life. No more boring conversations or dull evenings. No more envy at other people's happy, successful lives. All this from one amazing product, Grand Theft Auto Vice City. With this incredible product, you get cars, motorbikes, helicopters, weapons, nightclubs, boats, a host of new friends, and do-it-yourself equipment. Not to mention 9 hours of music, which is a lot. All this for just $49.99, including this handy carrying case. But wait, there's more. Similar products sell for as much as $5 million and can cause headaches. We've got martial arts, fashion, dancing girls, Blondie, Hall & Oates, catamarans, big houses, and lots of them. I've tried it, and Grand Theft Auto Vice City can really change your life. It'll put a spring in your step and reinvigorate your mind. Grand Theft Auto Vice City, rated M for mature. Oi!
Now, that may have been U.S. That I realize that's Anthony Sullivan, which is Billy Mays' partner.
Yeah.
Or was Billy Mays' partner. So that may have been U.S. and it just may not have aired in our market.
I never saw that one first run, never. Right.
But nonetheless, that was the kind of approach that PS2 took. They kind of went, okay, we have this black box. What makes this black box exciting? And it was the games and...
Part of it was gamer culture, like, yes. Like you brought up before. They were selling themselves as, this is the system for true gamers.
Right.
That now, if you're serious about this, you go Sony.
Now, that whole idea of true gamer versus not so true gamer or casual gamer, attitudes are changing.
Right. But at this era, that was still a major debate.
Yes.
And then you had Nintendo go, all right, we're finally going disc.
Yes.
GameCube comes out.
Yes.
Strangely enough, those tiny little discs, which from everything I've read was an anti-piracy thing, which just was idiotic. Because most games would be two of those, or if they'd done it on a regular CD, it would have been just one disc. Like all the Resident Evil games and all that were two discs and all that. And it's like, okay, anti-piracy, this is dumb.
Which is, I don't know. I don't know about how... Anti-piracy, I don't know where you get your information. I'm not sure
It's from old game pros.
Okay, that may not be... That may have been what they said. I don't think that's the truth, because... Here. This, if I open that up, you'll notice there are two sizes of tray
right
in here. That little disc fits in this second one right here on the regular CD-ROM of a computer. So... I don't know about anti-piracy or anything like that, but
that's what I read.
What I've read is that they wanted to keep the footprint of the entire system very, very small. So they decided to go with those and make it a cube rather than yet another rectangular solid.
And the GameCube, honestly, alongside PS2, gotta remember Microsoft's not in the game yet, graphically... was not bad. They really were right on Sony's heels when it came to graphics and sound. But again, it comes down to the games. Yet, honestly, I think more than anything else, the Resident Evil games, Resident Evil Zero and the Resident Evil remake that came out, at least within the circle of people I knew, that sold more GameCubes being an exclusive than it did than any other game that they had.
See, now I had a GameCube.
I still have one.
I really enjoy it. I love Mario Party, the version that came out for the GameCube and a few others. And it wasn't a bad little system. I also had that little dock that fit on the bottom where you could play Game Boy Advance games.
I've got that too.
Yeah.
Well, my only problem with that is it puts them in like a box in the center instead of taking up the whole screen. And I don't know why it does that.
Resolution issues?
Yeah, maybe.
But nonetheless, that was a nice little add-on. It was a decent little system, and I think between the Xbox 360 and the GameCube, one of those two controllers is the best controller ever made.
I didn't like the GameCube controller. I think the PS2 controller, which was a kind of a modified PS1 controller,
right.
I think that works really well. It's comfortable. It does its job.
See, I really loved the GameCube controller, and I think it was it ranks right up there with the Xbox 360 to be one of the best ever made. To change a few things, number one, I probably would have played with the buttons on the right-hand side a little bit to make them a little bit easier to discern which button is which, because when you have giant hands, you tend to hit the X and Y and A at the same time. But Nintendo
made another fatal mistake upon launch.
What's that?
Who's our mascot for Nintendo?
Mario.
Launch game? Luigi. Is Luigi's Adventure with no Mario.
Yeah.
That was a really, really bad decision, because a lot of people, especially looking back, I saw a documentary a couple of years ago that said, looking back, if they had launched with a Mario game, they think it could have almost tripled the GameCube sales, because that's what people expected. So GameCube going, no, we're going to try something different, went, oh, fuck, that really didn't work.
Yeah. I mean, it was a nice little system. We have no online, really.
But it also, I know a lot of people that still have working GameCubes. It doesn't seem to have a lot of crash issues.
No, it's extremely solid.
It's a very durable little system. Yes. I've seen ones where people have snapped the lid off, you know, because the lid popped up.
Yep.
And you still can work.
Yeah.
It's a pretty durable little fuck all of a system.
Yes.
You know, and then you had Microsoft come in.
Yes.
And Bill Gates say, I can compete.
You know, this was more Steve Ballmer than Bill Gates, but
Bill Gates made the announcement. So,
but yeah, you had Microsoft come in with a very heavy foot, and they went, we make computers, we know computer people, gamers are computer people, we're gonna go for the hardcore crowd again. And it was that dark cyberpunk feel to it with the original Xbox.
And they also had one game that is credited with selling, that this single game being exclusive to Xbox is what sold a million Xboxes.
Hello.
Play the commercial. Yeah, that this game sold a million Xboxes.
Yes.
When it seems like all is lost, when it feels as if you have no hope, when you are outnumbered, overpowered, and they've got you cornered, that's when you realize your last best hope is you. Halo, Combat Evolved, rated M for mature.
Yes.
And Halo being an exclusive, because that one, I remember the price points amongst my friends were, well, PS2, and I get a DVD player as well, but I really want to fucking play Halo. So it's like, oh, Xbox, PlayStation, Xbox, PlayStation.
It was a real debate, and I can tell you what solved it for me. I went over to a friend's house that had an original Xbox, and I picked up the controller.
Oh, you mean you picked up that giant piece of ham with buttons?
Yeah, I mean,
that thing was bulky. It was like a prostate, man.
It was one of the, I don't think you realize what these words mean that you're saying, but
an enlarged prostate. I saw one on TV. Somebody had it removed, and it was like, never mind. It was on one of the medical channels. Their enlarged prostate was removed, and it was like gross.
I'm just going to sit here and watch and see how long you can keep talking yourself into a hole.
But yeah, the controller was fucking terrible. It was, and again, going back to the N64 controller, heavy.
It was heavy. I have big hands. I mean, you know, they're not small by any stretch, but it felt, I would have been more comfortable with a keyboard and mouse.
And the weird thing is, the Xbox 360 controller is essentially the same thing, but with all the fat cut off of it. It's the same button layouts and everything, but it's much more streamlined and sleek. That's why it works so much. So I don't think that the idea was bad. It just needed a little bit more R&D before.
And it had, well, I don't know what it was, because I never got a chance to open one up, but Do you remember it had that giant Xbox logo right in the center that looked like it should have been a button?
Which the 360 was.
Which the 360 one was, but it was also about the size of a dime versus the size of somebody's house. But it looked like it should have been a button. And I remember picking it up. I wanted that to be a button so badly.
Push in, damn it. Push in.
But it wasn't. And I would have loved to have known. And with my friends, I don't know what it is about the original Xbox controller, but it also got insanely warm.
Yeah, it probably wasn't heat synced right.
There was something was up with it. I don't know. And even the 360 controllers and the PlayStation, they can get warm because your hands get warm and you're playing an intense game and blah, blah, blah. But no, this... It seemed like you could lay it on the ground, start up your system, leave it there for a while, and then pick it up, and it would be warmer than
it's supposed,
it's supposed to be. And I remember we could only play for so long
without pausing. And then Microsoft sold a ton of these.
Yes.
And then technically there's another generation after this, but it's the current one because people are still playing Xbox 360 and blah blah blah. But I think the 360 is a great system other than the Red Ring of Death.
The 360 really only fails on two things in my eyes. And I don't think it failed enough for it to make a difference when it comes to the Xbox One. One, I think the Xbox Online
should be free.
Should be free, and I think I don't mind a subscription option if it means that I get something. Again, the Sony model, I get something on top of it. But they also failed with the Kinect. That failed badly, and we can talk about that one. The online system failed it most. That's where they truly failed.
Well, that, and we cannot ignore the Red Ring of Death. Because the Red Ring of Death, again, from everything I've read, was a problem they knew about and said, we have to make our shipping date, ship it out, we'll deal with these as they arise. That, to me, is ruthless business over quality.
But again, I don't think it's going to make a difference in the long term. I think that anybody that wants to buy an Xbox One bought an Xbox One. And we're seeing that that's not that many people.
We can talk about that later. Launch botches. They botched the launch of, the announcement of that in every conceivable way.
And Sony did the right things to just leap on it.
Oh, Sony was predatory in a good way.
Yes.
Sony preyed on the stupidity of Microsoft in that in that regard.
And the ones that I'm curious about is who's our next contender? Because we're seeing...
Nintendo's basically said they're bowing out. The Wii U is more or less it.
Yeah, and that's not a bad idea. But that's what I'm wondering is who's the next contender? Because we're starting to see little projects like the Ouya and like a lot of the Android boxes and stuff like that that hook up to your TV. And I'm just curious who the next big player to step up and leap in is.
Do you think there has to be one, though? Or do you think that it can go down to a twofer like they thought it was going to when Sega bowed out?
Oh, I honestly, if I could make a prediction here, it would be that they're going to go down to a two-man race until the right system with the right games comes along to make it a three-man race or a two-man race with a different player. If Nintendo's smart, the Wii U will be the last console they ever make.
And yeah, because I think they said they want to just go back to software development. And they'll do it for both Microsoft and Sony.
I'm not sure. But frankly, if Nintendo is smart, they will concentrate on their mobile gaming. I don't even see why they have to make games for consoles at all. Just concentrate on their mobile gaming. The DS just prints money.
Well, the Game Boy did back in the old day, too.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's one thing we left out of the console wars is all the handhelds.
And we can talk about that in the future. Next week, we're going to talk about PCs, but for now...
Oh, you ruined it. You weren't supposed to tell them what next week was going to be.
You told them at the beginning of the show what next week was going to be.
I hinted at it. I didn't tell them what it was. I hinted at it.
Next week, we're going to talk about PC gaming, which I'm going to have to educate Josh on anything past 1995. Thank you all so much for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.